Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast and podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for returning to my show, and thank you for the fabulous crop of emails that I've had, especially for some reason in the last couple of weeks. Many, many new emailers, and that is always a test of how the show is doing, how many new people we're reaching, and we are reaching a lot of people who haven't heard the show before. And be very keen when you do email to let me know how you found out about the show. Some of you say that, and some of you say, well, you were just putting in terms like unexplained or paranormal or whatever into a search engine, and there I was, which is a sign of how well the website is doing, thanks to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Some of you are told by friends, and some of you have even been hearing audio of these shows on YouTube. If you are reposting these shows on YouTube, please, it's vital, otherwise this show is not going to grow, for you to put a link on your YouTube page, whatever it is, the posting, to this show and this website. That's vital, because otherwise we have a problem. But, I don't mind you hearing these shows via YouTube or however you hear them, as long as you come back to this website, register a hit on it. And if you can, of course, please make a contribution to the costs of running this show. There's a donation section on the front page of the website. It is totally secure, very, very easy. And if you have recently made a donation, thank you very, very much. Had some very good donations in lately, and they will help us to keep going through the winter and into 2011, for which we have a lot of plans, Adam and I, to develop the site. We might well do a bit of a redesign soon, so I'd like your thoughts about that. What would you like to see on this site? We're also debating at the moment something very exciting and a milestone. I don't know, there were times when I thought we would never reach it, but edition 50 is coming up in just a couple of editions' time. I am knocked out that we now have 50 hours of original, totally unique programming available. There will be much more coming soon and many more developments on this site. But we do want to do something special with Edition 50, and it's looking like it will coincide with the end of the year, which is pretty neat, because there are a few anniversaries about, two of them in particular. One of them I was involved in personally, but two of them. Rendlesham Forest, whatever happened at that US airbase in the UK back in December 1980, 30 years ago, can you believe it, where it was claimed there was contact of some sort, and there are some very chilling audio and video recordings of that time. But the audio recordings, if you listen to them in their entirety, they do occasionally appear in various places, will make your hair stand on end. What exactly happened there? And these people were credible, reliable witnesses. People I know personally, like Larry Warren, for example, an American who was working there at the time, now lives in Liverpool. He is on one of these unexplained shows. I did interview him when I was doing work up at Radio City in Liverpool last year, so you can hear him. Makes a very credible case and appears to be a very credible witness, and is connected to a lot of other very credible witnesses. I thought that some of the people who've been at Rendlesham were planning to do something for the 30th anniversary. Guys, if you're listening to this, or if you're connected to anybody who is, let me know if you have plans for this. So that's one idea. Another one, of course, is December the 8th or the 9th, depending on which side of the Atlantic you're on, is the 30th anniversary of the killing of John Lennon by Mark David Chapman. Something we've talked about on this site and on this show quite a bit, especially with Jonas Goda, the Lennon prophecy man, back at the end of 2009. We had him on from the US. And also with our Gary Patterson, the music conspiracy theorist and rock and roll legend guy. I guess he's more actually of a rock and roll legend guy than a conspiracy theorist. So we've talked about John and the significance of all sorts of things through his life, like the number 9 and many other things. So maybe we might work that in, or maybe we'll come up with something completely different. Maybe you've got a great idea, and if you have, I'd like to hear it. Go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, and you can send me an email through there, and I'd be very grateful to see it. So www.theunexplained.tv, that's the address of this website and also the place to make donations. James emailed, another new listener. James, thank you for this. James says that he was walking near the Chapel Cross nuclear power station. Now, this is one of Scotland's nuclear power sites that's being decommissioned, and there's a lot of debate about that among green groups, environmentalists and what have you, about what should happen to the waste from that site. But James was walking near this Chapel Cross power station site, September the 11th or 12th, around lunchtime this year, and saw a triangle in the sky above this site. Not the first time that a nuclear power station or a nuclear missile facility has had something above it. But interesting that he saw this, he says, and other people did too. So if you did too, and if you perhaps have seen reports explaining what this might be, I'm now intrigued. I'd like to know. This is obviously some kind of strange phenomenon. But there have been weird phenomena happening, haven't there, all this last year, starting with that spiral of light in the sky over Norway exactly a year ago, which was never fully explained, and various other things that have gone on through the year. Always good to hear your stories. Go to the website www.theunexplained.tv and get in touch through there. Now, the guest on the show this time is somebody who's very famous in America, is often on television and radio, and pretty unique she is. I first discovered her more than 10 years ago. She is an investigator and somebody with total credibility who's just won an award for her work but has been much recognized in various places. In America, if I say the name, you'll probably know it. I'm not sure if you will in the UK or the listeners in other parts of this world that we've got to the unexplained. Maybe you won't know her name, Linda Moulton Howe. Now, I always find it difficult to describe Linda and what she does. So the first thing I'm going to ask her when she comes on in just a moment from New Mexico is to define herself. But I would say that she has brought a credibility to the investigation of anomalous phenomena, there's a phrase for you, that perhaps didn't exist before, but we'll talk to her about that. Just remains me to say thank you very much to Martin for the theme tune, as I always do. Martin, please get in touch. Haven't heard from you for a long time, and that theme tune really gave this show a boost when you did two different versions of it. Love to talk with you, or at least get an email from you at some point. Adam in Liverpool at Creative Hotspot, doing great work getting this show out to you. And of course, you for listening to this, because the fact that we're nearly at 50 episodes and the show has developed and changed as it is always developing and changing is down to you. It's an evolution. We started off in a small way, and now here we are on the brink of another new year, but some very exciting things. And this, as I've said before, I think is the new radio. Now, radio as it is will continue, AM, FM, digital radio, but programs like this on the internet, I think, are going to be a big part of the future. And I'm really thrilled to have been there among the first wave, as they say. All right, let's cross now to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and let's get on investigator extraordinaire Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, thank you for making time for us.
Well, thank you, Howard. I'm delighted to be here today on Sunday in the middle of November as we end up the year of 2010 with everyone wondering what will 2011 and 2012 bring, not only with mysteries in the sky, but with political changes everywhere on the planet.
Totally. I mean, it has been, certainly for us here in the UK, we've had an amazing transition this year. Who would have predicted politically that we would end up the year with a coalition government, something that we haven't had here for years? I mean, it's something that goes back almost to wartime. The fact that we've got two parties now ruling this country, controversially, we have to say, well, we knew that would happen. I don't think I could have predicted that. Obama, as we speak in the States, well, you know, he got a bit of a wake-up call in the midterms, didn't he, from the Tea Party and others. It could have been worse, but a lot of change in the U.S. So we're looking at a great many things that are, I won't call them unstable. I find them exciting. I don't know about you.
Well, I would say disturbing in this way, that I think that the Americans seeing the UK college students protesting violently, the way violence and protests were in the 1960s in the United States, and some college students at Kent State even got shot dead, that there is this sense that everything is unfair, out of control for the masses of people, and that the idea that our so-called democracy and your so-called parliamentary democracy are fair to a upper class, middle class, and low class, that is no longer applying. There was I just was reading an editorial about how there does not seem to be any grounds for defining a prosperous middle class of white-collar workers in the United States anymore. They have economists who are now saying that those jobs that have gone in the last 3 years, they don't see them coming back. This kind of turmoil means that we have whole swaths of populations, not just in the United States and England, but France, all over the place, where they don't see light, excuse me, they don't see light at the end of the tunnel anymore about how do we put this whole broken planet back together economically so that there is some kind of real prosperity across all of the socioeconomic levels.
Linda, listen, I think you're absolutely right. And I, you know, at least on this platform, I can say so. We have a lot of people both sides of the Atlantic now who I would call them, and I studied politics, right? I would say that they are effectively disenfranchised. Now, when you get a lot of disenfranchised people, you get a lot of instability. And I don't know whether the people in the UK who are watching all of this happen, like those demonstrations, but watching the changes in our society and the cutbacks that have to be made because of the mess we got ourselves into with the economy, if they realize that part of the payback for all of this stuff, unless we're very, very careful about it, and I don't think we are going to be careful enough, will come in crime and instability and disturbances like the ones that you've seen. And unless we start to grasp and grapple with issues that have been left untackled for decades in this country and in your country, we're going to have problems. We've got to share the work out more. We've got to share opportunity out more. And this isn't radical talk now. You know, I'm a mainstream kind of guy. This is now in the mainstream. This is not just a political, you know, the fermenting of political discontent. This is something now that everybody has to confront. What are you saying?
And exactly, Howard, and it also goes to the heart of who have been the power brokers since World War II that made decisions in World War II, such as your Prime Minister Winston Churchill, as our President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the people that they passed their batons to, and that when we get into the area of what do governments know and why have they had policies of denial to keep the broad stream of, we'll call it the general public and the media, at a tremendous arm's length from what in World War II were defined as state secrets that were necessary to be kept in order to win a war. And then after the war, we know now in 2010, going into 2011, that for the last 60 years, your government and our government have had what I think of as the inside elite power brokers who might have thought of themselves as super patriots back then, holding on to secrets about non-human intelligences interacting with the Earth with very advanced technologies that even your prime minister wrote a note about his great interest in UFOs. And that over these six decades, I think that Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso told the absolute truth in his 1997 book, The Day After Roswell, that he and others in the Pentagon in the United States had what they described as extraterrestrial biological entity technology retrieved from some of these either landed, placed, or crashed vehicles that they described in some of the early documents as interplanetary or planform vehicles that were celestial. Those were words we found, interplanetary. Later on, it was craft of unknown origin. And over the years, all of these phrases come down to one singular point, that something that is not human has been interacting with Earth life for a long time, longer than 60 years, I'm convinced, but that we woke up to it in the modern World War II and post-World War II age. And now, today, in 2010, as this instability, this political instability, this absolute change of all of the original power forces out of World War II, where the United States and England and the Allies were the ones who ran the world, we have now just seen President Barack Obama go to Malaysia and go to India and go to a part of the world where we need some kind of help and allyship. And he is essentially coming back to the United States rebuffed on one of the big entangled issues that we're going to hear more and more of. What is going to happen in the currency wars between China, the United States, and Europe? And Howard, all of this, if the common denominator is that the people who have been running this planet for the last 60 years and have inside knowledge about non-humans and advanced technologies and might have some of, might have some of those advanced technologies underground someplace. What a travesty as we hit a time period where we need every bit of technology help that we can get to relieve our dependence on oil in the Middle East and start standing on all of our 2 feet again with some kind of allyship with China and with India and Japan.
All right, there are a couple of things that come out of what you just said. I'll get to the other one in just a moment, but this is the one that comes to my head first. If they have been sitting on this stuff for a while, and there are lots of us who think that there is much more that is being held on to, not only by your government, but also by ours, and they know stuff that they don't tell. The problem with this unstable situation that we have at the moment is that if it is suddenly discovered that they've been sitting on this stuff, that could be the match that lights the powder keg. That's the problem. So they now cannot afford, for a whole variety of vested reasons, to tell us anymore, because otherwise they're going to pay. They're going to suffer.
Howard, the great irony is that how many times have we heard from the 50s onward from people who were inside of government, military, or intel on either side of the Atlantic say, we have to keep a lid on all of this because it could upset religions and cause the downfall of Wall Street and the markets. When? This is exactly what the power brokers have done to the whole planet by greed.
Sure they have, and I don't think there will be many people listening to this because in some ways the people who listen to this show are people who are maybe more enlightened about these things than your mainstream Joe in the street. But the difficulty is that I think in this climate of instability, if that information came out or more of it came out, it would be further evidence for certain people that we're being led down the garden path, as we say here in England. We've been lied to for years, and that could be enough to tip the balance into some real trouble, some real disturbances.
Howard, do you know anyone in England who believes your government now?
Boy, I know a lot of people who don't. I'm sure there must be some who do, because the opinion polls that appear every morning on the news desk that I work at say that the parties still have support. It just shifts up and down and left and right. So I think there are some people who buy it.
Well, maybe I should say the other side of the coin. In the United States now, having grown up from childhood through an evolutionary period when this seemed the strongest, freest country on the planet, where we have helped so many countries with no desire to have territory, but to try to bring peace to the world. And yet, today, after the last couple of administrations, well, going back further, I don't know anybody anymore who trusts the government.
Mind you, Linda, look, let's just add this into this conversation, because people are going to email me and say so. Americans, of course, because of the very freedom that you do have, whether you think that freedom's an illusion or not, you do have the freedom to challenge. You have the freedom to ask those questions. You have the freedom to say that we're being lied to. You know, that's something that's part of your democracy. So in a way, that proves that the system's working, doesn't it?
Well, I suppose it depends on whether or not elections in this country, your country, or any alleged democracy any longer really have meaning beyond window dressing. I think that what we saw between the Bush and the Barack Obama administrations was that nothing changed, even though the Barack Obama, we'll call it landslide, the original landslide, won with energy that somehow we were going to return to what it was like before 9/11. And nothing changed.
So do you think we were sold a pup? Do you think we were sold a lie?
Well, I'm coming back to the same issue where I began. The power brokers. Who are the power brokers of the planet? Why is it that there seems to be some kind of entrenched ability to control and keep control on the money and the barter system of this planet by a tiny few that are the same names decade by decade, while the rest of the planet seems to slide down further and further? Now, clearly, we are seeing signs of tremendous life in Brazil and India and China. but they also have a lot of problems. And to me, when you step back and you say, what is the big picture of Earth? Where are we headed? It seems as if, apart from the 6.5 billion people, that there is some kind of entrenched power-broking system that is baffling, but the presence of it has been there since at least World War II, and that is the part that I think holds the keys to the kingdom of everything that we have retrieved and learned about a variety of non-humans interacting with this planet. And to stress something, we're not talking history. I just did an interview with a nurse. She has worked in an outstanding large American hospital for a very long time. You would consider her to be one of the most credible, helpful people. And only in the last couple of weeks, she and her husband, living in a city in Texas, have both interacted with what we'll call the non-human, not knowing the source, not knowing where it's from. It could be another dimension. It could be a timeline. It could be another solar system. I don't know. She does not know. But it was present. And when she saw a strange green, neon green light outside of the window of their bedroom, this was late at night, and they were waked up by a high-pitched sound, and she sees this green light, and her husband goes one direction, and she goes toward the window. And she said, I couldn't believe it. 8 inches from my face on the other side of the glass was an entity. And she described the, we'll call it skin, as looking like the bark on a tree. She's drawn a very fascinating illustration of this. Large eyes, but not the classic so-called gray of the last 40 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, this sounds like a gray, but not.
It is very interesting, very unusual, and from her, a nurse who has a very responsible position in a major hospital, she's talking to me about how she had a knee-jerk reaction as a calm and she's a compassionate human being by nature. And she said she raised her right hand and waved and said out loud, you must leave here. And that what came back into her head was definitely telepathic. She was not hearing audio, but the word was in English in her mind. Why? And that she said again out loud, because there will be helicopters and military and people will come here to kill you. And the entity again said, but why? And in her mind. Now, I thought this simple little conversation and the reaction, here is a compassionate human who does not think in terms of violence. And she tries to do, just go away, you will be harmed. Think about that in terms of 60 years of a policy of denial, allegedly in the interest of national security globally and nation.
Understood, Linda, but how would, and you've spoken to this lady, I wish I could have spoken to her, but how did she know that this entity, assuming it was an entity, would be harmed? Where did that come from?
We did talk about that, and she said, because that's what you hear, that if somebody reports a UFO or they report that there's been an entity, you get military that come in the skies here in this country, jets come, and she has this general impression that we will attack.
Mm.
Now,
If that was me, though, the first thing I would do, if I was in America, the first thing I would do is I'd find out the phone number of my nearest ABC, NBC, CBS affiliates news station, and I'd phone them up quick. You know, I wouldn't tell anybody else. I'd just say, the most amazing thing has happened, and here's a picture of it. You decide.
Right. And I agree with you. With in this day and age of smartphones that everybody's got with them, and some people, I think, sleep with them, that if she had done something like that and taking a photo, but I don't even think that they had a camera.
Right. Well, of course, you know, we don't keep, you know, I know I don't keep a camera by my bedside. I'd have to go and get one. But you know what I'm saying? That there is a way, isn't there, in a democracy where somebody who has an experience like that And I'm sure there must have been people who've had those experiences down the years. I mean, all the way back to Betty and Barney Hill years and years and years ago. You know, we know that there are people who are having these unexplained experiences. There are ways to get the information out there without necessarily drawing a crowd of men in black around your front door, aren't there?
But I think that what is coloring my thoughts this morning on November 14th as we talk is that only on October 23rd and in that middle part of October, I had first done an interview with Robert Salas, who I have known since the early 90s. And in fact, the first interview about Robert Salas being underground at Malmstrom Air Force Base in one of the Minuteman missile silos back on March 24th of 1967 was the interview that I did with Bob Salas on Coast to Coast AM when Art Bell was a host. And it was after that Coast to Coast interview with Robert Salas that Bob got a call from a man named Kaminsky, who was the Boeing engineer who went out in the 60s to check on, in that particular case, the Oscar and the Echo flights, 10 ICBMs in Malmstrom Air Force Base in the United States, 1 week apart. 10 had gone down, one every second for 10 seconds. Then Bob Salas is underground, and 10 go down, one every second, while the security alert team on the ground above is on the phone with Bob Salas describing this huge red, reddish-orange glowing disc that is sitting and moving around over missile silos, making the direct link, and they knew that other people had reported. But Bob, after all of this drama and something that the Boeing comes in and they conclude that what occurred was not possible because each of those missiles had been engineered to be handled and interacted with individually. It was not considered a strategically logical position to launch multiple missiles. If you did that, you might not have missiles to launch depending upon what happened, right?
Gee.
So you have engineers who made these things are saying what happened is impossible. That was 1967. We know that similar events happened before 67, after 67, in the 70s, and what happens on October 23rd. After I have done an in-depth interview again with Bob Salas that has been at Earth Files and on Coast to Coast AM and so forth now, we get a news bulletin. I first got a news bulletin that came through the computer that 50 ICBMs at Warren Air Force Base near Cheyenne, Wyoming, had gone down offline. This was only within a couple of days of having done an interview with Bob Salas looking at the whole history of ICBMs having interaction by glowing disks described by security alert teams in the air, but everything covered up. They had to sign non-disclosure agreements. All kinds of psychological abuse was given to these people. And when I see this 50, I immediately called Bob and asked, what do you think there's any possibility, even though there was no publicly released report, that anybody was seeing anything over the missile silos? And Bob said, I think the same thing applies now, Linda, as applied to our situation in 67. Those missiles are designed to be interacted with individually, and they're talking about pings and noise throughout the entire system and someone deciding that they're going to take those 50 missiles off. To him, it didn't ring true. I ended up talking with other people who had worked in missiles, and they all agreed. The story about some kind of an electrical malfunction did not hold up based on what people knew who had been inside of these silos.
And just through common sense and logic, you have to say that these things must have multiply redundant systems in them, and they're designed like airplanes not to go wrong.
And that was in the morning of October 23rd. What happened that night? Now, as I'm going to tell you what happened that night, I'm not, as a journalist, I'm not trying to say that there's any proof that there's any connection. But what I am saying is that on the same 24-hour day, this is what else happened, in addition to 50 missiles going offline at Warren Air Force Base. We only have three major Air Force bases that contain our ICBMs, and that is Minot, Malmstrom, and Warren. And at starting at around on the East Coast, starting at around 9 to 10 o'clock, which would be 7 o'clock in Montana and in Cheyenne, around 9 o'clock, people began calling their news TV stations, as you were recommending. They began calling fire, police in New Jersey, New York, Delaware, Cincinnati, Ohio, and eventually, again, around 10 o'clock in Phoenix, Arizona time, which would be 1 a.m. in New York, the local television stations in Phoenix also started getting calls, and all of these calls were complemented by cell phone video and photographs of odd red and blue and white, not all red and blue and white together, but red, like red-colored objects, blue-colored objects, white-colored objects in groups. Not exactly like migrating birds at all. It was very weird. And here was videotape, and it went out and it was reported on TV in all of these places, ended up in the newspaper in some cases. What is it that's flying over? And look at the geography that was covered, where people were seeing the same phenomenon from the Atlantic beach coast inland. Cincinnati, Ohio is a long way from the Atlantic coast.
Wow.
And Phoenix is all the way over to the 3,000 miles to the other side of our country.
You're pretty much west by the time you get there. So this all begs the question of what would be doing this, and what are they trying to do? Are they trying to say, if you think that you're in the driving seat with these ICBMs that give you some kind of power, here's a demonstration of the fact that you have no power at all?
Yeah. That's what Bob Salas concluded. This is what all of these different people that I've interviewed. Bob Salas, in my EarthFiles.com news report that went with my Coast to Coast radio report, said, all I could do is conclude that there was a message in our experiences in March of 67 and all the other experiences that other people have reported over the years that have been underground or above on the top, like security alert team. The message is there is something here that can not only bring down your missiles, one a second, Howard, one a second, 10 in 10 seconds, twice in a week. Other experiences have been that whatever this phenomena is, it could turn on a missile. There were people who panicked when a missile, the lights were flashing, that a missile was being engaged and they had nothing to do with it. These are reports that have come out in just the past few years. Well, to me, there is no argument with Bob Salas's conclusion that this was a message. We can control what you consider to be your largest weapon systems, buried under huge amounts of concrete. And in another interview that I will have at Earth Files and on Coast to Coast AM, November 23rd, I have interviewed a man whose father worked right from the beginning in all of our major missile system, the pre-Minuteman through all the Minuteman. And here is something that I did not know until I did these interviews. They went out on radio and in Earth Files, and then we start getting feedback, which is what Bob Salas and I and others had hoped. And here is what this new information is. Not only were missile systems where the people like Bob Salas are 60 feet underground in locked down launch control rooms. They can't get out until their shift is over. Above ground, our security alert teams, who are terrified, who, in one case, insubordination. They wouldn't even go forward to where an orange-red glowing object was. And they can be court-martialed for that. And they chose court-martial over trying to, quote-unquote, go and identify. Well, in the context of this all happening, and you, I, no one in the general public ever knew these things were occurring. It took all these years, and what was the expiration of non-disclosure agreement deadlines that some of them considered for this material to come out, and here is a new piece. That over and over, they found the upper cement 3-4 feet thick at the top, lifted off, and neatly set on the ground next to the open missile silos.
Now, what can do that?
Nothing. It would take cranes. It would take cranes. And yet, this happened over and over again. This is new information on top of everything else. And when you add all this up, and you look at this, and you say something highly advanced with technology that seems to be able to neutralize gravity is generally one of the conclusions about some of the technology, has been doing demonstrations that insiders in your government, my government, Australian government, and the allies of World War II, certainly at some level, insiders have discussed the details and the knowledge that they have learned from all of these interactions, and they have to conclude that something has wanted to prevent or show that it could prevent nuclear war. Why would it go to all this trouble and the government's work so hard to keep it secret, and that secrecy has seemed to serve both sides, the non-human and the human? Well, if you hold the press conference of all centuries, and you say, here's, we know that we are dealing with technologies that can neutralize gravity, that have propulsion systems that are not dependent upon fossil oil, that we have some of these craft underground. We are trying to back engineer them as fast as we can. Corporations have this technology and are trying to patent it inside of the United States. We are learning that this intelligence has been interacting with our planet for a very long time, long before World War II, and they can stop, shut down, interact, interfere with our missiles that we say are our greatest weapons. What does that do? I think it was one of the men I talked to said, the press conference to tell the truth also at the same time simultaneously emasculates the power brokers that are giving the press conference.
Well, that has to be true, doesn't it? That has to be true. But the other thing is, and this is the second point when we started talking about Obama going on a trip and taking himself to the Far East and stuff and coming back, having had a bit of a rebuttal there or whatever. The second point that I was going to make about all of this, and I think it's probably relevant now, is that, all right, we can keep the lid on this. You know, the United States, the United Kingdom, the Australians, and the other members of the club can keep a lid on this. But the problem is that there are new emerging powers here, and they are powers like India who are getting involved in space. The Chinese are becoming enormous. They're going to be in the driving seat with everything. They probably already are. They may not see things the way that we see things. So the danger is, isn't it, for the status quo, that one of these other powers is going to break ranks, is going to come out of the club, and is going to say, this is what's going on. We know about it, so we're powerful.
But why shouldn't that happen, Howard?
I'm not saying that it shouldn't happen, but it is a danger, isn't it, for the, if you follow, I mean, I studied politics, and one of the things that I studied was the theory of elites. Now, our elite and your elite, they won't want this stuff getting out there because that also emasculates them. If somebody else knows something and they're telling when you're trying to keep it quiet, that automatically makes them in a democratic system, in a democratic world, supposedly, more powerful, does it not?
Well, I keep thinking of this compassionate, wise nurse in Texas. And her instinctive reaction was to raise her hand and say hello, but then with concern. What do you suppose the history of the planet would have been over the last 60 years if Winston Churchill and Franklin Delano Roosevelt and others had said, well, let's try to make positive contact with whatever this is, and let's let the whole world in on what it is that we're trying to do, that we now know we're not alone in the universe, and whatever it is, it certainly doesn't seem to have any intent on wholesale destruction of anything, doesn't seem to be going around hurting people in any massive way. Let's find out what is going on, and we'll introduce this whole thing. The whole planet will become involved. What a different history we would have had.
Yes, in one sense. You know, the world may have been a far better place in another sense, then you're automatically ceding power to something much bigger than yourself, aren't you? And if you do that, you're going down a road that you don't know where it's headed.
I understand the point you're making, but in my own mind, it seems to me that if your political leaders are honest, and they reach out to their public and say, we're in this together. We don't have the answers, but we want to have all of you help us know what is going on in the skies where you live. What do you see on the ground? That we want to learn about this together as a planet. It would have been so healthy, I think, that the evolution would have been one in which maybe by now fossil fuels would have been set aside years ago, and this might be a prosperous, healthy planet. Instead, we are buried in lies that are policy lies everywhere.
But there may be some very earthly and mundane reasons for this. If you look at the British cabinet as it is now constituted, I saw a figure, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a big proportion of those people are millionaires in their own right. Now, to me, with my very small brain, that says, here's a bunch of people, and it must be the same in the US, who have an interest in the status quo. They're not going to change things because it's not in their interest.
And isn't that why we saw the pictures from England with your young college student age generation kicking in and breaking windows and setting everything on fire? Because they feel like it is the power brokers, the same inertia of power brokers that have had their fingers around the throat of the earth for decades and are making decisions that continue to serve those power brokers at the expense of everybody else, from the middle class down to college students.
Well, it's a good theory and it's a good interpretation, Linda. The only problem is that if you report these things and if you watch the British media about these things, you will see that the vast majority of students were not involved in that. They, you know, there were a few people, there were hotheads who did this thing, and it's still being investigated. It's not known if there are outside forces brought in. But maybe the most important point there is, and it's a point I haven't heard anybody make in the media here, that if it's only a small hardcore who are doing these things, how come all the others, the thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of them, stayed there? They stayed put in that place. They didn't go. So tacitly, it could be argued by those who might argue it, and I'm not saying it, but I'm just saying it's a theory to put out there. Even though most of them weren't involved in this, they stayed there. So tacitly, they were supporting it.
I think it's fear. I think that we are in a world now where once upon a time in the United States, there was a fearlessness here. And now people whisper in airports. I think the same thing is in England. I know that when I was there a couple of years ago, friends that have lived and been born, raised, and lived in England, they said that they feel like that they are in something beginning to approach a police state. And with cameras everywhere and in a world that the governments argue, well, we have to look out for terrorists. But you and I know when policy, when governments start defining their role to protect citizens by photographing them, patting them down, being able to arrest them anywhere on any silly charge, that we are sliding dangerously close to the Western world moving into police state psychology. And even if the politicians want to window dress that we still are a democracy and there are still elections, underneath there is this sense of this sort of insidious policing of everything that is occurring. And that is why I am speaking so frankly this morning, is that I feel, like a lot of my colleagues do, that we are at a dangerous, dangerous crossroads that is not just whether what's going to happen in the United States or what is going to happen in England or France. We are at a dangerous crossroads about what is this planet going to be like in another 10 to 15 years.
In a way, Linda, and if we follow this, look, I've been interested in UFOs, ufology, what might be out there, all the rest of it, all my life, ever since I was a little kid. And I watched a series on the TV from the US called The Invaders, and somebody in America sent me a comic book about it. And you know, I really got hooked on all of this stuff and started to investigate the more serious aspects of it. We need intervention, don't we? If there is a force out there that is capable of intervening for the good, isn't it time that it stopped these things from happening, if these things indeed are happening, and came and helped us? I'm not putting this point very well, but I think you're probably getting my drift here, that now is the time. If it is such a tipping point, then if ever we needed a benevolent force somewhere to come in and help us, maybe now's that time.
It is the ultimate question. And I remember back in the spring of this year on Coast to Coast AM with George Noory, we had a discussion about the, it was once called British Petroleum, now is referred to only as BP, the horrible, disastrous BP Macondo well spill, 4,600 feet or so down in the Gulf. And the whole world knows that story. And when they couldn't stop it, when we had 24/7 constant video of all of this oil and then the dispersants on top of the oil entering into the precious and beautiful Gulf of Mexico, where so many people's lives are dependent upon the shellfish industry and on and on and on. And there was this sense that the government literally was paralyzed, or that BP was the combination of the two, that they couldn't get on top of some kind of a problem of engineering that none of us in the general public or media truly understood. I don't think anybody did. And it's in your face. It's pouring out. It is destroying something that is precious, and it is there every time you turn the TV on.
And as you say, the most important point of all of this is the one that's emerging now. Is that here we have a government who appears to be not exactly powerless to do anything about it, but certainly hamstrung. There was another occasion in your own country, New Orleans. The response to that was less than great, wasn't it?
Well, I was just going to conclude with, during that period of time when the disaster was before us for so many days, so long, that you began to hear in general conversations, and that's what George Noory and I were talking about on Coast, is, if there are non-humans with advanced technologies that could stop that BP Macondo well in a microsecond, now is the time to show up and do it and show us that they aren't taking over the Earth, that they are advanced, that we're not alone. Look at all the pluses that could be accomplished at that moment.
All right, so why do you think then, and we only have human intelligence as far as we go, why do you think, Linda, they're not doing it?
I wish I had some kind of a coherent answer to that question, because it really nags at me. I've heard all the arguments about maybe we're on a planet where there is some, you know, like Star Trek Federation embargo, and that.
So it's the Prime Directive.
Yeah, and that we're considered to be some kind of baby experiment of a life form that has to be kind of kept in its prison school planet until it learns enough lessons that it can go out into space. And there are variations on that theme. And then there are other arguments that we humans, or all hominids, have been genetically manipulated into existence by the very intelligence or intelligences interacting with the Earth now. And that the worst thing they can do, if they have set all this in motion for some experiment that has an agenda, would be to interact. Because once they interact and we discover that we're somebody else's smart biological androids, that ends whatever their experiment is. So between those two options and a lot of other arguments, you realize that it is possible that there can be advanced intelligences in which secrecy serves them, like secrecy serves the scared governments, and the population and the media are forever left out of the inside.
So how on earth do we ever, you know, how do we ever resolve that? As ordinary people, with increasing mass consciousness, with better media, more intelligent than ever, we've all graduated high school, you know, in terms of what we know these days. You know, how can we overcome that as a race of people? Because it seems now from what you're saying, and, you know, I have to say there's a lot to agree with there, Linda, the governments are almost irrelevant now. It's about the people.
Well, you know, if it were about people who had been allowed to be educated, about people who were allowed to truly be representative of each nation, who were not under the thumb of the power brokers, who had evolved with the same knowledge that the power brokers have, then maybe the mass demonstrations in a world that increasingly begins to feel like Mad Max, the Mad Max movie, then maybe the mass mind of humans would be making right decisions. But we are talking about populations in every direction that are in complete and total ignorance, Howard. And in some way, an answer, a simple answer to your question is the word time. That back in around 1983 to 84 time period, when I was very, very deeply immersed in everything from going out into the field and gathering tissue and soil and grass from animal mutilation sites, getting it to a pathologist and learning that the excisions were being made with something that cooked the hemoglobin and the collagen, but at the same time did not leave a carbon residue, which is what lasers do. Therefore, the cutting instrument could not be a laser. And moving into when I was trying to do the HBO special and I get blocked every which way by people who are in the government, at some point, one man told me, he said, Linda, I can tell you one fact that I know in my work. There was a decision that was made during the Truman to Eisenhower transition that a policy written in some secret executive order that they would go at least three generations, and a generation in textbooks is defined as 25 years, that they would go 75 years into the future before one piece of the truth would be allowed out. Well, depending upon what year you begin to add 75 to.
We're getting awful close.
Exactly. And is there any signal from any human government that any human politician and power broker is close to finally breaking through the cement of lies to tell us the truth? Now, if the governments aren't, and they decide to try for another 25 years, another generation, living a complete lie, knowing that we're not alone in the universe, I don't think that that would work, because I think there is something about time and timelines, and that whatever this non-human agenda is, it becomes a part of its self-interest to finally let us know. Eventually, what I'm saying is, whether it is our allies on the non-human side or non-allies, and I don't know details about that either, it's just a sentence, but whoever it is that is on the other side of all these human lies, I think that it will do something to pull the rug out from under the policies of denial.
Would you like to be a conduit for this information when it comes in 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is? Would you like them to use you?
I am a reporter by heart. I am a journalist by profession. My job is to try to understand what is really going on, see through murk, see through lies if I can, and try to at least report pointing in the right directions of what truths are. And in that regard, I'm not a conduit. I am somebody who is trying to understand and help the public understand. I feel that whatever we're coming up against, for governments to be so afraid and to be hanging on to these policies of denial from World War II on and hanging on to them with a certain kind of desperation, as it's been described to me, that means they're still running scared. But what is there to be afraid of?
Do you think they know what there is to be afraid of? Presumably, well, if these things are messing around with our ICBMs, they do know.
But, Howard, you could make the argument that I can make. If their goal is to keep us humans from starting a nuclear war that will end up killing so much life, is that bad?
Well, you know, that's a question we've got to park because I don't have the answer for that. I suspect not. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just a journalist like you are, Linda. I'll tell you something, though. The most important thing, and I've heard you over this year doing stuff on American radio, and I've heard you speak like I've never heard you speak. I've heard you talk about cattle mutilations and all sorts of stuff. But this stuff, when I heard you first, I think middle of this year or so, talking this way, absolutely hooked me because I have spoken to so many people now who think this way. All right, they come at it from slightly different angles, but a lot of people think that we are headed towards something. We're going towards some kind of critical mass. It doesn't have to be in 2012, but something's going on, and you don't have to be, you know, way out there on the extremes. This is now going mainstream. This is the thing that, as a journalist, and you know that I work in mainstream news, you know, for much of my time, and I do this as my, you know, as my labor of love, as we say here, you know, there's something going on, but it's getting a handle on what it is. But a lot of people think that there is something happening, and it's something that's far bigger than these governments that we elect.
Well, don't you feel that the entire planet took a 90-degree turn on September 11th, 2001? And I mean the whole planet took a 90-degree turn. And it is as if we have been rapidly experiencing a revolution superimposed upon us without our understanding the who, the what, or the why. And I believe that in this 2001 to now 2011, it's 10 years, a decade, that everyone in every country, even those that are prospering and blooming, like Brazil and India and China, that they sense and talk about, the world isn't what it was, and it seems to be rushing pell-mell towards something else, that no one has a feeling for what is coming. And here, I think, is the real bottom line. No one anywhere in any government knows how to fix all the damage that is in governments and the barter system on this planet right now.
Mm. And as you say, September the 11th, 2001, was just one symbol of that. I went to America and covered the first anniversary. I walked, even 12 months on, those streets were still strewn with dust. There were cafes where the clocks were stuck at the time when the towers came down. You know, there were a lot of shell-shocked people there who really, everything they believed in had been challenged. I went back another year for the second anniversary where they had the same reading of names, which they have every time round. And I found the same thing. I think it was, for a lot of people, a massive wake-up call that we're not invincible, that there are forces that are deeply dysfunctional now in our world. There's something wrong. Life can never be as it was.
And, you know, out of all of this chaos and the Mad Max feeling is, in a funny, strange way, possibly, the beginning feeling inside myself of a question you asked earlier. That kind of goes to the issue of, what about Deus Ex Machina? What about the divine field that has no entropy and has no violence? The divine field that philosophers have defined for centuries as the alpha to the omega, where there is no entropy. And then outside of the divine field are the matter worlds, and we're in one of those matter universes, and there may be an infinite number of universes, as quantum physicists and others are now writing paper after paper after paper. That we're not only in the universe, on a planet with life, that there is a multiverse, and it is teeming with intelligence in all directions, and that there is something about the relationship between the divine field, in which there is no entropy and violence, and the matter worlds that are born in heat and light and violence. you sense that maybe out of all of this, we are beginning to feel like that through all this chaos, there is a possibility that a hand will be reached down like that classic, beautiful painting at the Vatican, and the finger of the divine will touch the fingers of humanity, and something huge will change, and it will have to be that way because humans by themselves are not going to be able to revolutionize without massive death. That is a possibility.
Wow. I think it's a good point to park this conversation. It's very hard to bring it to a conclusion because these matters that we've talked about are so weighty, and they go to the heart of everything, and all that you and I can agree on is that things are changing, and in many ways the norms that you and I lived by for all these years of growing up, I mean, I'm guessing we're the same sort of generation, those have all gone out of the window. We have this great world of technology and communication, but we've got bigger questions than we would ever have thought when you and I were studying whatever we were studying and becoming journalists, we ever thought we would face. I think, as you think, that is potentially exciting if we wake up and smell the coffee. And I don't know, I always have to be very careful that I'm a guy who considers himself to be, you know, part of being a conduit and part of being the messenger. I don't want to sound like I am delivering the message here. I don't want to be like Peter Finch in that movie Network, you know, standing out and screaming, I'm madder than hell and I won't take it anymore. But increasingly, that's how I'm starting to feel. Isn't that weird?
Howard, if I may just take another minute or so.
And do it.
It is about this. One of the most provocative PhysOrg, which is physics organization, these journals that come out with new breakthroughs in theory and sometimes hard evidence. One of the most provocative new pieces out of the world of physics is that we are in a holographic universe. And as I was reading this last week, I thought, if this is a holographic universe, a hologram by definition implies something, some intelligence, produced and created the hologram.
Sure. Absolutely.
Once you get to, oh, wow, physicists are saying this is a holographic universe. Who made it? I thought, wow, Stephen Hawking is going to have to go back and rethink. No God force, no divine force was necessary for producing the cosmos, because a holographic universe could only, at least from what we know about holograms, It's a projection from something else through something else.
Wow. What a thought to leave it on. And just finally, bringing it back to a human level, you know, as a human being, I'm concerned about your nurse in Texas who had that profound experience, she says. How does she live the rest of her life now?
She is both troubled, and I'm going to tell you why she's troubled, but she's also philosophical about the fact that this being, to her waving her hand and her trying to warn it, that it was basically saying why, as if it were nonviolent, as if it was not, whatever it was not programmed to be thinking about hurting anybody, right? This is part of it. But this is what troubled her. And I think it's what's troubled every human in the human abduction syndrome since at least the 1960s in the famous first Betty and Barney Hill case that made public, but there had been many other experiences before and after. She said, Linda, whoever they are, and whyever they're here, what gives them the right to think that they can come into any of our homes, bedrooms, decks, cars? Why are they doing this without asking our permission? And I've heard this asked to me in a plaintive way by so many people over the years. Every abductee has that question. And today, talking to you this morning, the only thing that I can say, which I said to her and I have said to other abductees, it may be because the ultimate truth might be that we are, in fact, a genetically manipulated species, and that the intelligences that are interacting with the Earth and humans now in the modern world may assume that we are some kind of property and they don't need to ask permission. But as I wrote in my book, Glimpses Volume 1 and Glimpses Volume 2, it may be that part of this revolution that we're in is that humans now must come to understand that they must feel it. It must be a level of consciousness that will never leave us. That if a light, a beam of light, an entity that is glowing is in front of us, we don't automatically get down on our knees to a god.
Wow. Linda, thank you very much for that. There are going to be people who've never heard you before hearing this now, which is the beauty of this webcast that I do, because I'm reaching a lot of people in different parts of the world now. It goes from Malaysia to, you wouldn't believe the places where people are listening, New Zealand, Finland, you name a place, I've got listeners. So if they're intrigued by what you've said, where do they find out more?
My news website that's been evolving and growing for 11 years now is earthfiles.com. Think of a reporter who files news about the earth. So it is earthfiles.com. And the email to me on all of these issues and more is earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And the books and the documentaries that I have done about some of these subjects are in a section of Earth Files called the Earth Files Shop. And I bring it up because I have had some people retired in government and in intel tell me that Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, from their point of view, contains more facts than they thought anyone had in the public.
The truth is out there. Who said that? We know.
Glimpses.
Hey, Linda, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And, you know, I am, well, I've just sat back and enjoyed what you said because it makes so much sense and coherence. One thing you didn't mention, but it's on your website. You're far too modest to mention it. You got an award recently, didn't you, for your work?
Thank you. Earth Files has received several of the Web News Awards. And then in May, I was a speaker at the X Conference at the National Press Club in Washington. And I was completely surprised, did not know that it was going to be presented to me. But it was an award from the X Conference to me for courage in journalism. And that means a great deal to me because one of the bottom lines to everything I have been doing in my professional life is that you can't enter these subjects if you are afraid. But if you stay in curiosity and you care about your planet and your fellow human being, you keep going forward in these difficult subjects because I truly believe in the pressure of fact that it will help keep us strong when lies and policies of denial, I think, weaken us.
Well, I'd be very keen to get your thoughts on Linda Moulton Howe. Her website, of course, is earthfiles.com. You can access that through my website, which is www.theunexplained.tv. Thank you very much for listening to this show. Please tell your friends about it if you want to link to the site. That's okay, but please let me know that you're doing that. Tell me how you found the show. I said this at the top of this one. If you've used a search engine, which one was it? If you've been told by somebody, that's good. Or if you've read about it, perhaps in somebody's blog or in a magazine, always interesting to know how you find the show. But there is no doubt that more and more new people are finding the show. So wherever in the world you are listening to this, thank you very much. Thank you to Adam Cornwell, a creative hotspot in Liverpool, for getting the show out to you. Adam, you're doing great work. You know you are. Martin for the theme tune, you for listening. My name is Howard Hughes, and I will return very soon with another edition of The Unexplained.